Welcome back again for the 341st time, Parish of the Patriots, right here on Radio Albion. We're a great show. I strive to have a great show every week. Some weeks I probably do a better job than others. I'm confident we're going to have a lengthy discussion today on things that I think it'll be thought-provoking. Again, I go for that every week. Sometimes maybe I miss the mark. I'm going to forewarn you, right when you clicked on the show, you know, it shows you how long. I know we're less than a minute in, and I know already we're going to run long today. And I apologize for that. I do try to stay about an hour. But there's a lot of things I'm going to get into today. The Christian-specific segment, it's going to be long today. And I think it's going to be an interesting thought exercise, so I hope you'll stay around for it. But like I say, we're going to go long, and I hope you can stick with it. If you can, if you look at it, I'm like, I ain't listening to this long. I don't blame you, but I'd at least encourage you to skip forward then and at least listen to the Christian-specific segment. If you're, particularly if you're a believer. If you're not, then maybe not. I don't care. Whatever. Anyway, if you do get something out of the show, don't be shy about those ties. We've got snail mail right here on the description page for Parish of the Patriots. You got to go to the Parish of the Patriots show. You see, we'd like you going to click and listen to this worldwide show. If you look right under that, I got the snail mail address. That's what I got. I don't have no crypto. I don't have any crypto. I ain't got no cryptocurrency. I ain't got none of that newfangled. Because I can't cash it in because they've gotten so absurd with a lot of the stuff with that. So I don't do that. I got the snail of the mail. Everybody can do that. That's what I got. And I do appreciate it. That having been said, listener supporter mailbag, I got one this week. As always, very appreciated. GPD, thanks for keeping the Albion flag aloft and shining the light. Be well and may God bless. That is from Nick. Thank you very much, Nick. And that reminds me, I don't know how many of y'all are aware or not, but we're just over a month and a half from Sven being completely like off parole. Hallelujah. Once again, a free man, as much of a free man as you can possibly be in the United Kingdom. At which point, I'll get to, you know, we'll be able to discuss this situation a lot more. And I'm looking forward to him being loose. I stay, you know, in contact with him, and he is doing well. He's anxious to get past this finish line. And I can't blame him. I'm sure he is ready to be done. I sure as hell am. I know Dr. Johnson is. Something to look forward to. For God willing, before this year is out, Sven will be 100% free. And maybe, just maybe, this place will go back to having more content. And you know, you were talking about keeping the Radio Albion flag aloft and whatnot. I really have to thank y'all right back on behalf of Sven, myself, Dr. Johnson. Like I told Sven, we're keeping the lights on. That's all I can say. The amount of content is so much less than when Sven was here. And I know we all really appreciate y'all for having kind of stuck with us. You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of, I'm aware there's a mass amount of difference between the various content that was being posted up on this site before to what has been the past couple of years. You know, just Dr. Johnson and me. You know, we have 4 days a week, one show per day. That's it. And there was way, way more than that before. And the fact that y'all have stuck it out, you know, through these years with us, I know all of us, we really do appreciate it. You know, I know, Matt and myself, we do the best we can. But I mean, variety is the spice of life, and there's not been a whole lot of variety here. It's just been he and I. And again, thank y'all for sticking with us. We're almost to the finish line. Hallelujah. I don't know how, I'll be honest, I don't know at what capacity, you know, Sven will be involved, you know, or what he's going to be able to do. That'll be a decision he'll have to make. I don't know. You know, because he is, you know, in the UK, and y'all, I don't have to explain what that means as far as their, shall we say, speech regulations and whatnot. But no, so we're just going to have to see how that plays out. But I'm still 100% looking forward to it. Now, as you know, I am a big seeker of truth. I like the truth. I like understanding things. I'm geared that way. I like understanding how things work, why they work, whether it's a machine, a system, or the world around us. I'm just big on that. And I think a lot of y'all probably are too. And when you look at the way lies and falsehoods and manipulation are put forth out there, and when you get to the truth of the matter, when you get past their lying rhetoric and you get to the truth of the matter, it's really interesting. It's really interesting to watch these things play out. Now, in the aftermath of this whole Charlie Kirk thing, and no, don't click off. I'm not talking about Charlie Kirk. I know y'all are sick of hearing about it or talking about it. Trust me. Me too. Bear with me. We're not talking about that. Hallelujah. But we are talking about observations in the aftermath of it. Yeah, right after this, you had all these people, these politicians and whatnot, coming out and making these blanket statements like copypasta. You never notice how insincere it is. Like when all these various politicians or celebrities or whatever, these politicians, they come out and they basically all make, regardless of political party, they all make the same copy-paste statements on Twitter. You know, like the email went out and they were given an AI-generated choice of various ways to say the same thing. And the interns that run their Twitter account are copy-pasting. They pick one, copy-paste it, and post it up on Twitter. Yes, as I always say, I refuse to call it X. That's ridiculous. It is Twitter. It will always be Twitter for me. And in these copy-paste statements has been this denouncement of political violence. Political violence can have no part in our society as a democracy values of who we are. We may have our disagreements, but it should never cross the lines of political violence. I found this interesting, and as such, I thought today we would have a discussion along these lines about political violence. It's a touchy subject. I guess it's touchy enough, I should say, from the outset, that as we get into this discussion of truth, I'm in no way, shape, or form advocating or promoting violence. And I don't mean that simply as like a lawyerly disclaimer to try to be, to try to claim I'm not saying what I'm actually saying. Nothing like that. It's people have a tendency to hear what they want to hear. What we're looking to discuss today is the reality. How much sincerity is behind these statements denouncing political violence, and how violence is not the answer. And because people tend to hear what they want to hear, it's very easy for people to say, oh, well, he's advocate. He's telling people, you got to go do this. If you think of the discussion, I picture, we haven't obviously had the discussion yet, where I'm going with this in the whole context of it, with an open mind towards truth, it'd be pretty quick to understand that it's not in any way, shape, or form what I'm saying or advocating for. But again, because people have a tendency to hear what they want to hear, I always say one thing you learn doing podcasts or anything like this is people don't care about your opinions. What they want to hear is their opinions coming out of your mouth. And as a result of an extension of that is people will tend to hear what they want to hear coming out of your mouth. It's like, your show was great last week where you said this, that, or the other. And I'm sitting here thinking, what? I didn't say anything like that. What the hell are you talking about? So with that out of the way, how sincere are these statements about political violence? We have no place for political violence. All these politicians in particular denouncing political violence. Now, if you're a Norby tier conservative, you'd say, yeah, it's pretty ironic. The demon rats, they've been demonizing the Republicans and patriots for years now. And they, now they have the nerve to act like, oh, their hands are clean. I'm doing my best to stay on topic. I could jump from one thing to the next. These denouncements of political violence, my first thing that struck me, particularly when it comes to these politicians, and, you know, how political violence has no place in our democracy values of who we are. Well, that's obviously and observably bullshit. Because what they're really saying is they themselves, the government, is the only one who should have a monopoly on political violence. What is the, how is the government have the amount of authority and power they do? The threat of violence and the government being a political entity, it is political violence. I'm going to find the picture and probably use it for a picture for the show. But a great example of this is the picture from back in the day where they forced integration in the South, and you have these students there and the National Guard under federal orders is standing there pointing bayonets at them to force them into school integration. How you feel about school integration is irrelevant. The point here is that that is, by definition, that is political violence. It's pretty rich having all these politicians come out now and denounce political violence. They have a monopoly on it. That's all they're doing. They're protecting their monopoly on political violence. Every year, do you pay your taxes? When you pay your taxes every year to the IRS, do you do it because you love the government and everything they do and you think they spend your every penny they take from you in the wisest and most efficient manner possible? And by golly, you wish you could just double down and give extra. No, you pay your taxes for the same damn reason everybody else pays their taxes, because behind that is the threat of violence. And if it's violence from the government, it's political violence. If you decide to take a political stand and say, I think the income tax is unconstitutional, I'm a sovereign citizen, and I'm not going to pay it, what are you going to do about it? Well, at the end of the day, they could potentially come, take all your stuff, and if they so decide, they can shoot you and just claim you did this, that, or the other. They have the whole system that we live under runs on political violence. And it's pretty rich when they're out here denouncing it left and right. It's kind of like how they go on about, you know, political change can only come about through peaceful protests of the people. That is such a crock of shit. You know, this country, the United States, it didn't come from the colonists peacefully protesting against the king. It came about from political violence. That's just a matter of fact. It came about from political violence. Now, what they're talking about now, when they're tossing, banting about these terms of political violence, isn't political violence. Hear me out here. Like, you know, they're framing the Charlie Kirk thing, which there's so many holes in the government's already story. That the bullshit stinks from here. We're not going there. What they're talking about with the Charlie Kirk thing, that is not political violence. They're saying it is. You know, they're saying this left-wing, probably Antifa, you know, he was living. You're checking all the boxes here. You, his roommate. Isn't it funny how the media is talking about his boyfriend who was transitioning to female? And what was it, like a year, maybe at the most 2 years ago? The same media would have a meltdown and condemn you if you didn't use the proper pronouns. Anybody else think it's funny that the mainstream media is referring to the roommate as this guy's boyfriend who is transitioning? Isn't that using the incorrect pronouns? I thought that was a high sin. It changes, doesn't it? But even taking what they're claiming happened at face value, and that's a huge grain of salt, but even doing so, this is what they're pointing at as political, and it's not political violence. And I'm going to explain that here in a minute, why I see it that way. This is not political violence per se. It's just basically chaos, mob violence. If we're talking about political violence, I think political violence in the historical context gets down to a pretty specific thing. You know, the pretty well set parameters of what I would define as political violence. If you have somebody speaking on political issues and you don't like what they're saying, and you go and you shoot that person because I guess, yeah, I don't even know how people rationalize that in their head. You know, that person's positions are evil. However, I am unable to rebut them, so I will just shoot them and kill them. I win. You know, I mean, I don't know how people square that circle in their heads that their positions are correct. The other person's positions are incorrect. But because they have an inability to rebut that person's position, they will just kill them, and that means they won the argument. It's an evil world we live in. That's not political violence. That's just murder. It really, and again, I'm going to get down to why that is. It's kind of like the hate crime laws that are so absurd. You know, if you go and kill somebody because you don't like them, because they're black or they're a homosexual or because they're white and a Trump supporter, it doesn't matter. If you go and kill somebody, you know, and they enact these hate crime laws, you get a bigger punishment because you didn't like that person. You had hate in your heart. Look, at the end of the day, you're a murderer. That's it. Your motivation, because you don't like what they say, they don't like the way they look, they don't like what kind of stuff they're doing in their bedroom, or their political views, you're just a murderer, okay? Your excuses for why you're a murderer are largely irrelevant. You're just a murderer, and you should be tried as a murderer, simple as. If you walk up and shot somebody in the head because they're black and you don't like black people, or you walk up and shoot somebody in the head because they're a Trump supporter and you don't like Trump, your motivations, what I'm saying here is your motivations and your excuses are really irrelevant. You're just a murderer, okay? And you should be tried as a murderer. All this other stuff is rhetoric to manipulate people. And they are manipulating people. They're stirring up, they're ginning up more and more chaos for certain reasons, for whatever reasons. Our discussion in the Christian specific segment may or may not be related to that. Little teaser for you there. Have any of you noticed that on mainstream platforms, Twitter, YouTube, they're allowing people to say things that are way, way beyond what a lot of us were saying just several years back that got us permabanned off of various social media platforms? Anybody else notice that? These people are still on. They're still getting sponsorships. And they're literally openly calling for shooting people and basically violence, political violence, quote unquote. It's not. And yet, no problem. Looking back at the great bannings that happened years ago, it's like, it's honestly pretty milquetoast compared to a lot of things I'm seeing openly posted now. Is it because they've let up on the censorship? If you believe that, then I don't know. Bless your heart. You know, if you think the censorship algorithms are less than what they were then, and they've suddenly got a new respect for free speech, I guess you can go on and believe that. I don't believe that. They're cultivating it for a reason. Yeah, Pam Bondi, or Bondi, however the hell you say it, Attorney General. She was out and did an interview talking about hate speech is not free speech. And my patriots are out there cheering for it. You see, they flip it around. And then they go so far as they can with that and then flip it the other way. And the other side thinks they're getting revenge. And none of them notice that everything's marching in the same direction. But that's not really the point of our discussion today. I'm getting a little off topic. Political violence. What's the difference? You know, I think I've kind of nail down why these sorts of things they're talking about. When the people who, again, have a monopoly on actual political violence, when the government can send the National Guard or the cops and point guns at you to force you to do what they want you to do, the government, by its definition, is a political entity. That is political violence. They have a monopoly on it. They don't want any competition. I think we've already nailed down why these, what they're pointing at and calling it political violence. It's not political violence. It's just murder. It's just people murdering each other in the chaos. You can point to how hypocritical it is that the very people who are stirring this up, and I do believe there's an intentional effort being made to whip people up into a frenzy on every sort of political issue. And as an extension of that, encouraging people, especially the mentally unstable, to be manipulated to take those next steps into murdering people. But again, it's not political violence. Political violence in a revolutionary context. I use the example I mentioned earlier. You know, the United States didn't get independence from Great Britain by peacefully protesting the king. They used political violence. Now, that was political violence. Political violence in the real context has got a hierarchy. It's organized. You basically, at the end of it, you have a element of an elite class, an aristocratic class, as it were, rebelling against the old order of elites or the old order of the aristocracy, as it were, for lack of a better term. I'm probably not using those terms correctly, but or at least not entirely so. But you get my point. When you had the American colonists, you had all these rich guys. You know, the founding fathers, they were rich guys. They organized this. They funded it. They put out media programs. They organized these militias, these small units, these armies. They sat around. They made plans. They plotted policy and battles and everything else. That's political violence. There's a hierarchy. There's an order. There's money behind it. There is class of people at the top that are leading it. A bunch of randos that get mad and go out into the street with pitchforks, torches, or ARs, that's not political violence. That's mob violence because there's no order to it. There is no actual political push. I referenced earlier how you see a lot of stuff out there now that is way beyond the pale of what was allowed years ago. And I believe the reasons it's allowed is what's being encouraged here is essentially mob violence. When you have somebody, for instance, somebody say something along the lines, you know, just in the general context of we, there's always a we there. The person saying it isn't going to be out there doing it 9 times out of 10, guarantee you. But they'll say, you know, we need to get in the street. We are allowing this to happen. These crazy leftists, we need to get our guns and go out there and show them who's boss. You're just talking about mob violence. You're just talking about let's everybody get stirred up, whipped up out in the street and just have a big gunfight and see how many bodies hit the floor. If that happens, what changes politically at the end of the day? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because there's no leadership. There's no hierarchy. There's no elite class that has organized this and is going to push through a political agenda to change the system to the way they want it at the end of the day. You've got a bunch of randos pissed off in the street having a riot. That's all you're talking about here is having a riot. There's no political. What makes it political violence is a push for actual political change. That's not going to happen from a group of pissed off people in the street showing who's boss. You're going to have to have somebody leadership position, you know, a group of people, like I say, a elite, if you would, that is ready to counter the old guard and take their place running things. Does that make sense? The American, the founding fathers of the United States, they wanted to take the place here of the aristocracy that was running things, the elite that were running things in Great Britain. And they did so through political violence. Now, this is worth pointing out because there's all this talk now. Again, these are narratives that are pushed through these algorithms. And I really have confidence in y'all having some intelligence. I really do. You know, that y'all get this. In fact, to the point sometimes I think I'm stating the obvious, but it's still worth stating because it's the truth and the truth always has value. There's a lot of talk about civil war. This is being pushed right now. America is heading towards a civil war. America, there's a civil, we're on a unchangeable track headed towards civil war. America is going to erupt into civil war. No, it's possibly headed towards erupting into some chaos, mob violence, and some more murders for various excuses. But America is not headed towards a civil war. Point somewhere to where you have a class of people looking to push out the current political elites, the current political class being pushed out and being replaced by this other class. It's not there. Everybody in any sort of influential position to be influential, to take a leadership position in this country, is at the end of the day under the thumb and the influence of the same people that are under that are holding political influence now. They're taking money. They're put into those positions by the same ruling elite. So ain't a damn thing going to change. What they're talking, what they're whipping up, and all this bullshit talk about civil war. They're talking about chaos, mob violence, randos shooting randos because of whatever excuse they've got. There is no rising political elite to replace the old elite who are organizing a force and a group. If you had a group of people with money, power, influence in, say, Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. I'm just picking those three states for whatever reason. And they came together and organized a movement and gained power in these areas and then stepped forward and said, we're seceding from the United States of America. You could be potentially talking about civil war. I don't think it would play out as the same as last time because of inability to do so, but that's not a part of today's discussion. That would be potentially civil war because now you have an organized elite. They're looking to usurp, kick out the old elite because they think they can run things better. And honestly, they think they can probably make more money under that situation than the people who are doing it now. Makes sense. Do you see that anywhere? A lot of people are saying, oh, Elon Musk. If you don't understand that Elon Musk is again, like so many of these other people, an invented character. They had this whole narrative that he's this super genius and he seems eccentric because he's such a super genius. And then like the more the guy talks, you realize that he's just a barely functioning autist that has been put into that position. He's just playing a role like so many of these other people. They're just actors at the end of the day. They're playing a role. They took the ticket, they're playing their part in this theater. If you don't have an organ, it's not political violence unless there is a political center for pushing for change. And these changes, historically speaking, when they came about, they always come about through violence. Virtually every single time, they come about through violence. I just pick an example. Even if things change at a ballot box in history or something, it's preceded by a lot of violence. And there's organizations and powers pushing on each side of that. So, to wrap it up, all this BS talk about political violence from people who have a monopoly on political violence of all things. So I'm big on the idea that words have to have meaning. Otherwise, you can't get to the truth. And they're constantly changing what words mean so that you can't get to the truth. It's why I think it's so, I'm such a stickler for sticking to the definition of words. You know, we've seen this over and over. You know, and these terminologies they use, political violence, we have to know what that means. We have to define what that means. Otherwise, it's just sloganeering. And you get caught up getting baffled with their bullshit. Now, what we're seeing now, this talk of civil war, all of this stuff they're talking about, this is not political violence, it's mob violence. And they're encouraging it. They're trying to play innocent, like they're trying to discourage people. They're doing everything they can to encourage it. On the one hand, they're stirring up these people on the on the left, as it were, and they're stirring up the other people on the other side. They're stirring up chaos. There's no civil war coming. There's no political violence. There's various excuses for violence by people who just want to be violent. But there's no organized actual push for political change. Again, you're not going to get political change from a bunch of randos going out on the street and slinging bullets at one another. You're just not. If anything, it solidifies those who are already in power, because the people as a whole are not going to put up with mobs of idiots out in the street slinging lead at one another. They're going to demand that the current ruling establishment step in and establish order. And lo and behold, what's that going to require? More and more draconian crackdowns on everybody. It's so obvious. People keep falling for it. Anyway, I know the show's going to run long, and I don't need it to run any longer than it necessarily is going to. So let's go ahead and keep rocking, get into the Christian specific segment this week. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, unsurprisingly, with the amount of turmoil in the world, in upheaval, the amount of upheaval, there's no shortage of folks that are zeroed in, focused on these end days, on the end days, and the happenings of the end days. And it's understandable. We do live in tumultuous times, for sure. You can see all sorts of signs going on, and you can tell it's in the season. Now, it's kind of honestly pretty painful as a believer to see a lot of people discussing it because of, well, honestly, their lack of information concerning this. For instance, I was just scrolling through a comment section last night before I went to bed, a comment section on a video, and there was a whole little section of people going on and on about the rapture. You know, that's one of my personal favorite subjects, the rapture. And they were like, oh, there's a theory that the rapture has already happened and we just missed it. Oh, the rapture. Oh, don't worry, the rapture. And I just sit there thinking to myself, what y'all are running around in circles about something that's not even real. The rapture. But it is indeed. Indeed, we don't know exact time and whatnot. But I thought we'd have our discussion today. We're going to theorize a little bit. I'm going to share some ideas that I have of how and why we could see it coming about. And those will just be theories. It's not necessarily anything, but it's going to be more biblical based than the rapture. I can tell you that. And then we'll get into some things that are matter of fact, that I believe them to be true. That's why I share them with y'all, because I do. As I say a lot of people posting comments, about, like I said, the rapture and whatever. And another more common one is again, with all of the upheaval, turmoil, uncertain times, I'll see people post, please come soon, Lord Jesus. I'm just waiting. I can't wait for Jesus to come. And maybe they think there's going to be a rapture and they're going to just get beamed up. I don't know. And what we do indeed as believers look forward to the day of the Lord, And we can't forget that, you know, it's written in the Bible that the day of the Lord is a terrible day. It is terrible, as in terrorizing. And I don't think, because we know it's written, and I'm just kind of dart throwing at the Bible here. I don't have time to go and look up and write down and quote every verse. So I just assume, as always, y'all are fairly familiar with these various passages written in the Bible. You know, he's going to, you know, there'll be a new heaven and a new earth when Jesus returns. And finally, you know, everything at the end is basically winding down. It says he's going to create a new heaven and a new earth. And these people, I see a lot of these people, and they're posting about, you know, please come, Lord Jesus. Lord Jesus is going to save us, and he's going to fix all of this. And I don't know, do they not realize that when Jesus returns, he's going to destroy this world? It says that he's going to create, he's going to build a new heaven and a new earth. You can't build a new one if the old one's still standing. We look at the example of the covenant. The old covenant is gone. You have a new covenant because you can't have two opposing contracts in force at the same time. So you have to dissolve the first contract and enact the new contract. How are you going to build? If you owned a plot of land and you're going to, and you told your friend, I'm going to build a new house. Well, your friend is going to naturally assume that, well, you're going to have to tear down the houses there now. Because there's no, how are you going to build a new house if you don't tear down the old house? And I think a lot of these people miss this fact that the return of Jesus is going to be the destruction of the world. More, you know, it's written not to be deceived. You know, when somebody says he's here, he's there, you know, oh, yeah. And again, I another one of those things I see people foolishly commenting is they'll say, oh, Jesus has already returned. It's already happened. You see, this is we're in this weird, we just forgot about it. Jesus returned. And now this is a little after spot, you know, and we just don't really. And that's humorous to me because there were people spreading that back during the disciples, the apostles' time. You know, people saying you just missed it. Jesus has already turned. It's already happened. Now, Jesus said, it's written that when Jesus returns, it'll be like lightning across the sky from the east to the west. In other words, everyone will know it. There won't be any doubt. The idea that you're going to have to guess whether that's him. And I believe that the reason for that is what he's going to do. We live in a temporal realm. That is the defining element. Time is the defining element of the realm we live in. And what Jesus is going to do is remove that. I always wind up thinking of this realm, the earth, this world we live in, as like being in an aquarium with a lid on it. And we're just like, I don't know, reptiles or whatever, bugs, whatever you want to put in an aquarium. And we're just in there. We're completely oblivious that there's a world outside of that. And we're in this aquarium just going about our business. But when Jesus figuratively takes the lid off of the aquarium, we look up, there's going to be no doubt. We're going to be like, it's all going to be revealed. Time will cease to exist, and then we're going to see things for what they are. So in all practical purposes, he's going to destroy this world. It's going to be, my point here is, it's going to be really terrifying. And I think it's important to understand that, because if you just so happen to be here when that occurs, it is going to be utterly terrifying. Now, we're told as believers that when that day comes, look up because our redemption is near. But everybody else is going to be looking up in absolute sheer terror, because the world as we know it will come to an end. Now, what I've discussed so far, I'm pretty confident in the truth of the matter. I'm always learning and always, you know, trying to increase my understanding in these things. But to the best of my ability at this point, I'm pretty confident in the truths of what I've said so far. From here forward, we're going to get into some theorizing. And it's just theorizing. It's minimal biblical backing it up. We're just having a little theory. But I'm honestly fairly confident in this theorizing. But it is just there. And this is just from me. So, you know, I may be wrong. I'm telling you up front, I may be wrong. But I thought it'd be an interesting thing. It's something a little different. To discuss. Again, we're believers. You're all familiar with the prophecies and talking about the Antichrist and things like that. And what is this going to mean? Because we know that the devil is active in the world. Maybe we know this. Jesus, one of the best examples, clearest examples of this in the Bible is Jesus' temptation in the desert when the devil offers him all the kingdoms of the world. He, if he'll bow down and worship Satan, then he can, quote unquote, rule all the kingdoms. Here, I'll hand you all these kingdoms. And Jesus never corrects him and says, those aren't yours to give. So he's obviously, we're told here that he has dominion over these kingdoms of the world. Now, I don't think that that means he's directly running those kingdoms. There's obviously different men running these various kingdoms, these various governments. But he does have dominion over them. He rules them. So that means basically he has influence. At the end of the day, he has the ability of where they're going to go. I personally believe that every nation in the world, because again, he told Jesus, I'll give you all these kingdoms and you can rule over them. It was a lie, of course, because you would be, it's like any other ticket taking from the devil. You get the position, but at the end of the day, you do what you're told. But he said he was going to give him, he could rule over all these kingdoms in the world if he'd bow down and worship them. So, in my view, all of these people that run these different nations, because there's no reason to think it's different today than it was then. So we look at all of these different nations, all these different countries in the world today, and many of them are in conflict. Well, I think the people that run the countries, they have a certain amount of autonomy. And what I mean by that is, if America wants to attack Iraq, the devil doesn't care. If you want to brutalize each other and have wars or whatever, he doesn't care about that. But there's certain things that he does, and he has the overriding say-so in it. I think a really good example of this is how you have all of these different countries, many of them with conflict with one another. But then you have the Antarctica Treaty that says they all cooperate to make sure not just any and everybody can go to Antarctica and see what's down there. Now you can get into what you think is down there. That's irrelevant for our discussion today for the most part. The fact is the treaty exists and all of these countries work together to make sure it's managed. Now, if you want to believe that's because they really care that, it's kind of a pristine environment there and they're concerned about nature or some shit. That's all on you. You believe what you want. But the reality is all of these countries, again, many of them on the surface in conflict with one another, they do work together on this. Kind of tells you something. It's kind of like how you'll have all of these conflicts, say, between China and the U.S. and Trump talking smack about China and this and all this conflict. But then they all go to the World Economic Forum and stand up there and take turns giving speeches. They all get together, slap each other on the back. You see, they're allowed their conflicts. The devil doesn't care about that. He's not micromanaging everything. But there are certain things that he has an overriding say-so on. To me, it's obvious that there's something about Antarctica that it requires that overriding veto. Again, I'm not here to theorize what it is. I do believe it's something that if it was known, it would tell us the nature of the world we live in. And then you wouldn't be able to deny the creator and all of their nihilistic, you're just here for now, you came from monkeys, nonsense would fly out the window if it was widely known. There's something, and again, then you just get into guessing because you don't know, I don't know. But I do believe that there's something there that would tell us, that would reveal in a manner the true nature of the creation we live in, to where you couldn't deny there was a creator. It would just be, it's so blatant that you couldn't deny it. And so it has to be hidden, and it is. So, with what we've thought about so far, the devil is essentially running things in the world, but from behind the curtain, as it were. You have your various leaders and your different forms of government, and they're allowed a certain amount of autonomy to do what they do. But at the end of the day, the enemy has kind of an overriding veto. He runs things from behind the curtain. Now, because we know as the end days fold out, he's going to come out from behind the curtain. For whatever reason, something changes. And I think that's something that gets missed. People just act like, well, these things happen. They're just going to happen because that's the way they got to happen. The devil has spent all of this time running things from behind the curtain. Something's going to change. Something is changes to where he comes out from behind the curtain. And I believe a lot of what we're seeing is leading to that. And we'll get into that. And again, we're kind of in theorizing here. Just my own thoughts on it. Have you ever found it curious? You have thousands of years of history of mankind. And yeah, I mean, there's changes in technology, like gunpowder, for instance. But for the most part, I mean, think about this. Historically speaking, you know, 200 years, we'll just grab that for a round number. 200 years is a very, very small window of time in historical terms. I mean, you think about thousands of years of history, and then you think 200 years. I mean, that's basically, say, three lifetimes, three generations, you've covered 200 years. Yeah, roughly. A little more than that, but you get the point. 200 years ago, what was the main mode of transportation? You're riding a horse or a donkey. 1,000 years ago, what was your main form of transportation? You're riding a horse or a donkey. Yes, there's advancements in technology, but they're very incremental for a long time. And people weren't stupid. We have all these technological gadgets, and idiots like to act like that means we're smart. When you or I or anybody with a discerning eye can look around at the world today, and there's 100% without any doubt, people are dumber than they've ever been. I don't come at me. People are obviously getting dumber. I don't think that's arguable. You look at the writings from ancient times, you know, leftover writings, works, and you know, people were obviously more intelligent than they are now. But yeah, I mean, we have more gadgets. You have things really changing very little at all, for the most part, for all of this history. And then, starting around, say, roughly 1900, I was like, roughly speaking, and you have this advance. Think about it. In 1900, I mean, somebody born in 1900, just for some context, I was born in the late 60s. I'm a Gen Xer. Someone born in 1900 wasn't even all that old when I was born. So in 1900, we couldn't even fly. And now we have what? Hypersonic missiles? Planes that can travel faster than the speed of sound? Is it because people got smarter? No. So where did it come from? It's being pushed forward in a manner. You know, things, the stage is being set, as it were. But more precisely, where do you think all that technology has come from? You have people, you look at the right, look at Socrates or Plato or whatever. And, you know, these guys were not stupid. They were obviously very smart. And yet, around 1900, all of a sudden, we begin this rapid advance in technology. Now, you can believe that that's completely organic and normal, but I don't. I'm sorry, I don't. You can't convince me of that. Oh, this technology was given, put in place. When you think about the end times, again, I believe what we're talking about here and what I'm trying to get to, and maybe I'm not doing that good of a job at it. You're talking about Satan stepping out from behind the curtain. He is going to override the system. I really believe one of the important things about understanding the nature of the world we live in, the creation, is because we understand the creator by looking at it. I've said this before, but if you look at a work of art, you can tell something about the creator. Like, you know, people go on about Picasso, and it's like you look at a Picasso painting and you're like, I don't know much about Picasso, but I can tell that guy was freaking nuts. I mean, you look at the artwork. If you understand, the more you understand about the creation, the more you understand about the creator. And when you understand about the creation, this world we live in, you start more understanding the nature of how it works, then you can understand some of these other things that come into play and why they come into play. See, I believe one of the characteristics of this creation, God created this world. As you know, one of the things that drives me crazy about a lot of these Christian people running around is they act like God is micromanaging their lives. Like, you know, because God is omnipotent, God is, you know, watching your every second of your every minute of your every day under a microscope, watching what you do, like you're the center of the universe. No, we're not. There's no reason to do that. That would be like saying someone created a computer program and the guy who created the computer program spends every waking hour of his day micro-studying the program and watching it run. No, you create the computer program so you can walk off and it can do the work for you. God created this realm to run itself, to be self-managed so he doesn't have to sit down and manage every aspect of your life. People be like, why does God allow this to happen? This is just life. Again, in the concept, in the context of how temporary it is, once you leave this world, it's almost, I'm not going to say it's irrelevant, but it kind of is. I'm having to really keep myself on topic here because I got a lot I want to get into today, and it's going to be real easy to get off on side streets, as it were, as I'm known to do. And I want to stay on because I want to get into this. The system is self-correcting. And at the end of the day, what that means is I believe this system, this world we live in, the creation, at its core, what it does in many different ways is it seeks balance. When things are out of balance, and when you hear people talk about, oh, the pendulum has swung so far this way, now it's inevitable that the pendulum is going to swing hard back the other way. Unbeknownst to a lot of people who say that, I believe what they're unintentionally pointing to and referencing is the fact that the fundamental nature of the system is to seek balance so things keep running. The purpose of the system itself, the reason why it exists, is so that we can spend our time here spiritually maturing, making the choices we need to make, and being prepared for the kingdom of God. And those who don't do that will go elsewhere. But for the remnant that is here, That's why we're here. That's why the system even exists. If the remnant goes away, the people, if you hit it, were to hit a point to where nobody is doing that, why have the system running at all? It's no longer serving its purpose. Now, if the system seeks balance, that's not to say the system cannot be put out of balance. It can. But the further out of balance, the harsher the return to balance will be. I think a good example of this, if you're familiar with the history of the Jews, you know, they've got this long history of, you know, they'll get settled into a country, you know, they start prospering there, they start causing problems there, there's a backlash, and they would get expelled out of that country. You know, they would wind up gaining undue influence and all of those things. So in other words, things would get a little out of balance. Not majorly out of balance, but they would get out of balance. They would get expelled and things return to balance. You know, the pendulum swing, as it were, if you want to stick with that analogy, is not really that big. And they would go to another country. They'd get expelled from a country, move over to another country, settle in there, and start the process over again. They've got a long history of that. If you look at their influence today, we're way beyond that. They have a massive amount of... I don't think anybody can deny that now. I mean, the most normie-tier normies are now talking about, wow, you know, our government seems to step and fetch for everything Israel wants. Well, if it's everything Israel wants, it's everything the Jews want, because they themselves define Israel as an ethnic Jewish state. Again, pretty much everybody across the political spectrum now, except for the most brain dead people, are pretty much coming to an acknowledgement of that because it's so obvious. So you have a situation where the pendulum now is way, 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 way out of balance. If the system works to put things back in balance, and always understand the system doesn't, the system isn't caring. It's not compassionate. It just does what it does. It puts things, it's designed to put things back in balance. If it requires a little bit and things go back in balance, so be it. If it's a lot and billions must die, then it will do that. It doesn't sit around. It's not. The system is not God micromanaging. It is like an autonomous thing without emotions. It's just what has been created. I hope this makes sense and doesn't sound schizo. So if billions must die, the system isn't thinking about that. It's just putting things in balance. It's not weighing morality or anything like that. It's just acting autonomously to keep this creation working and in balance. Now, anybody can look and say, sticking on the example of Jewish influence, it's way out of balance. So that tells us that the push to put things back in balance is probably going to be pretty severe. We're going to get to the meat of this Antichrist thinking in theory here. We're getting closer, I promise. I know I've gone, we're almost half an hour and I'm really barely getting into it, but we're going to cover it today. It's, you have all of these things that push. Is the world, we have all this technology. Do you think the world itself is better than it was hundreds of years ago as a whole? I'm not talking about, yes, we have better knowledge of hygiene and things like that, which is all good. You know, we have more technology and whatnot. I'm just talking about better. The people better. Are the people better at fulfilling their actual purpose of being here, which is seeking God and spiritually maturing through Jesus Christ? Do you think it's better now or no? Because this world's starting to look like a mass production of people going to hell from where I sit. Now, again, from what they themselves say, we're talking groups, not individual people. But from what they themselves, usury, pornography, and whatnot, we kind of know the fruits of this Jewish influence and as a whole. Put it another way, Israel, this modern nation state, or as I like to refer to it jokingly, I'm not trying to say this is what the Bible talking about, but one of my personal, because I think it's funny and I have a weird sense of humor, Israel, or as I like to recall, or as I like to call it, the abomination that causes desolation. Has the existence of Israel made the world as a whole a better place or a worse place? Is the influence that we've seen, this out of balance influence, has it made things better or worse, objectively speaking? Now, I'm going to say something. Yes, it would probably get me accused of anti-Semitism. It wouldn't be the first, but I believe it is factual. Jewish influence is akin to satanic influence. If you just look at the results. Now, if Satan is running things from behind the curtain, we're getting to the meat of this now. If Satan is running things from behind the curtain, it just makes sense that he is going to have middlemen. You know, people who basically work as the go-between. And I do believe they play a key role in this. I think Jesus said things that were pretty much pointing to this as well. And they're not the only ones. They're non-Jews who sign up to be a part of that as well. But for the most part, I think that they work as a middleman, as it were, as Satan works behind the curtain. Now, where I'm getting all of this is, why is, when you talk about the appearance of the Antichrist, why is Satan, what changes? Why is Satan coming out from behind the curtain? If something has to change that makes him make that move. I don't want to get off topic, so I'm just going to kind of, because I've talked about it before on occasion, but you know, if you look at the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the devil did everything he could to avoid that move. He did. He tried to bribe Jesus. He tried to influence Jesus to settle for something else. He did all of these different things. He used peer pressure, family, everything in the world to get Jesus to change direction. At the end of the day, he was forced. His hand was forced. He couldn't let Jesus continue doing what he was doing. He couldn't leave him alone. But at the same time, I don't think the devil's dumb. I think he knew that once he did make that move, it would put certain things in motion that inevitably, it's like that turning point in a chess game to where you have to make this move. And yet when you make this move, you know that 20 moves from now or whatever, you're going to be in checkmate, but you continue with the game anyway. You try to avoid getting in that situation. The other player sitting across from you puts you in that box to where this is the only move you can make. And when you do make it, yeah, you have a lot of moves left. But in X amount of moves, you're going to wind up in checkmate. And the devil coming out from behind the curtain is another one of those fateful things. Now, we're talking about the system seeking balance, and we have this way out of balance of this Jewish influence. If the system is allowed to run on its own, to do what it normally does, it is going to push things back into balance. It will. It is inevitable. And I think we see signs of this. Israel is currently, because of their actions, particularly with the Palestinians, but also related to, you know, attacking all of their neighbors, flaunting their ridiculous amount of influence in the West, they're becoming a pariah state. They are. I saw a deal the other day. Netanyahu was telling, he made a speech somewhere, or he was talking somewhere, and he was warning the people of Israel that they need to start becoming self-reliant. They need to get ready to basically turn inward and be able to function without any outside help. Now, if you understand the nature of the Jewish state, I don't think that's possible. I don't. Parasites don't, and I'm not saying parasite as an insult. I'm saying Israel exists as basically a parasitic state. If you cut off all the outside funding support, military and otherwise, I don't think it's going to continue. I don't think it can continue. It doesn't have the ability to become, you know, if you look at Russia, for instance, with the sanctions, you know, they're big enough. They're able to basically turn inward and just make their own stuff and become self-sufficient. I don't think Israel has that ability. I don't think they have the size. I don't just by its very nature of what it is. I don't think they can do that. Israel is observably becoming a pariah state. And I don't think it can even continue as things stand that much longer. I mean, in reality, if the United States economically collapses, and you know, at some point it is, you know, what becomes of Israel? Because that's their linchpin. And there's just so many factors working against it. You know, they've antagonized so many people in that region that if you take the United States out of the equation, how long can they stand? You know, my point being, and I'm probably belaboring a little bit, I'm sorry, but if the system is allowed to continue, the out of balance, over the top amount of Jewish influence is going to be returned to a normal state. And because it's so out of balance, that push is going to be extremely hard. Now, as I said earlier, if you believe that basically they act as they, one of their primary things they do is they act as the middleman. And if Jewish influence can be equated on certain levels as Satan's influence, if that pushback, if you allow the system to self-correct and put things back in balance, that means Satan's fixing to lose a whole lot of influence. So the devil is faced with let the system continue to function as it has been and lose a lot of influence and essentially start back over on a lot of this stuff from scratch. Or he can intercede directly into the system and not allow it to rebalance itself. This is a dilemma for the devil, much like the dilemma he faced with what to do with Jesus. If he can either allow the system to function, continue to stay behind the curtain, and the system is going to inevitably rebalance itself, and he's going to lose a whole lot of influence, and in a lot of ways, he's going to have to start over, you know, and start rebuilding things back, you know, under, you know, to increase his influence again. Or he can intercede directly into the system and not allow the system to rebalance. The problem with that is, if he intercedes, if he interferes directly in the system, then the system ceases to serve its purpose. God allows the world to continue, even though the devil is in the world and doing his thing. God allows the world to continue because at the end of the day, the world is serving its purpose. Bad things happen to people. Yes, God is not micromanaging every individual person's life. The system is still more or less functioning the way it should, and people have the opportunity to fulfill their purpose of existing in this world, so God lets the system continue. However, if the enemy directly intercedes into the system, that's another story, because now the system cannot function the way God designed it. I always liken it to if you have a computer that's hooked up to the internet and suddenly you realize that someone has taken over the computer and is not doing what you set it up to do any longer. What are you going to do? You're going to unplug the damn thing. There's no point in the system existing if it has been directly interfered with. Satan comes out from behind the curtain, and I think that's his choice, and I think it's pretty obvious what he's going to decide to do. He's going to come out from behind the curtain and intercede directly. I think from his point of view, he kind of has no choice. Letting things correct to the middle and trying to re-go at it again is pointless, because you're going to get back to that point and it's going to rebalance. Might as well step up from behind the curtain and push his end goal. I've said this before, and again, we're in this part. I'm just theorizing. We're just thinking out loud. I think a lot of this nonsense they're promoting right now. Do you ever notice we went through all this time, the government was like, anything, you know, UFO and stuff is gibberish. And now the government themselves are promoting it. I really do think they're gearing up for an alien hoax, as it were. People, they're going to, the devil stepping out from behind the curtain means that the entities, because remember, the devil is the devil, he's singular, but we know from the Bible that he has minions that work under him, princes. Principalities always says we're in conflict with kingdoms and principalities. You know, he has those that work under him. So there's many entities, lieutenants, generals, however you want to visualize it in your mind. There's a hierarchy in Satan's organization. When these entities step out from behind the curtain, how are you going to introduce them to the public? When they're going to come out into the open, they say they come out with these extraterrestrials. And as always with the lies, there's a little element of fact in there that makes it believable. I saw a deal in one of these theories there floating out there. Is, you know, when they talk about extraterrestrials, interdimensional beings, angels and angels and demons and the like would fall into that category, wouldn't they? Of interdimensional beings. It'd just be another way. I've always said people who refuse to believe in the Lord, if you changed all of that up and just spoke about interdimensional beings, those same people would probably be like, yeah, that could totally be true. And all you're doing is changing the terminology. You see what I'm saying? They say extraterrestrials, and people will just put it together themselves in their own mind that they're talking about space aliens from outer space. And you bring them out from behind the curtain. These entities that these rulers have been in contact in reality with for a very long time. Obviously, this show is going to run really long today. I hope it's interesting enough to keep you engaged. I always like to keep this show at an hour because I do believe there's limits to how long people, you know, just, and I'm not being insulting, I'm including myself in that, you know, can stay engaged with something. Like if somebody says, check this podcast out, and I click it up and it shows that the overall length of the podcast is 3 hours, I'm not listening to that shit. I ain't got time for that. But we are going to be long. And again, I hope it's interesting enough that it's worth staying engaged with. Now, if what would this mean, theorize, we continue to theorize, what would this mean for the Jews? Now, a lot of people would, I believe, incorrectly jump to the conclusion and say, well, this would be great for them. You could say the Jews are waiting for their Messiah. Their Messiah is not our Messiah. The point being, if the enemy steps out from behind the curtain, what does he need middlemen for anymore? You see what I'm saying? He doesn't need the middlemen anymore. Now, again, the devil is not God. And those who serve him, those who've worked for him, those who have been the middlemen for him, like everything else, he doesn't love them. They're all disposable. The enemy the devil stepping out from behind the curtain is going to be very bad for them. I believe in my theory, because they're no longer necessary. He doesn't need middlemen anymore. He's there. He's going to do it directly now. And if it serves his purpose, under the bus they go. Now, if you look at the context of Israel and how they've antagonized everyone on the face of the planet, imagine the devil steps out from behind the curtain. These entities step out from behind the curtain, and they were to say, well, the first thing we got y'all need to do, we're going to help y'all straighten your stuff out. The first thing y'all need to do is something about these Jews. And everybody's going to be like, yes, finally. They're disposable now. God loves his children. The devil doesn't. Humanity as a whole, the devil hates humanity, period. It is written in the Bible, you know, it'll cause them to worship the beast, causes mankind to worship the beast. And people, when they read that, they have this vision that like people with guns are standing around forcing you to get on your knees and bow and worship. I don't think that's the case. I think people, it will cause them to. I think they will voluntarily, they'll just be on board 100%. You think about it, if they brought these entities out and the entities said, well, the first order we're going to do to save you from yourselves is we're going to get rid of all of this Jewish influence in your society and your government and straighten all of this out. How many of you would celebrate that with the frustration and the aggravation and watching your politicians behave the way they do? How many of you would be really, really tempted to celebrate that? When he's promising peace and prosperity and setting things right and things have been wrong for so long and you can't have any influence on what your government does and get them to change direction. You know? If you lived in one of these European countries where they've been flooded with migrants and these entities show up and say, first thing you got to do is get these people out and put them back in their countries. We're saved. In other words, there is a critical point when there's so much chaos that bringing order is going to be such a relief that people will not really think in the big context. People tend not to anyway. They're going to be on board. You know, they will worship them in their heart, as it were. Things that people push back against now, you know, so you just say, like a digital currency to buy and sell everything, then people are like, no way. These entities show up and bring order and start setting things right in the eyes of the people. And they say, as a part of that plan, y'all need to have, you know, this digital currency ID, whatever the hell. People will go with it. You've seen it. I've seen it. You know, people that'll push against, you know, resist something. You just tweak it around and turn the tables around a little bit and they're all on board. It's not a big leap to see that happening. But again, and we got to wrap up. When the devil intercedes directly in the system ceases to function, and then the Lord is going to shut it down, as it were. When Jesus appears, and like I said at the beginning of this discussion, these people who just, oh, I can't wait for Jesus to come. And the Bible specifically warns that the day of the Lord is a terrible day. In other words, terror. Not terrible as in a bad thing, necessarily, but it is going to be one of sheer terror. If you imagine everything you understand is centered around the concept of time, everything in this world, distance is related to time. Everything that you understand about the world around you is time-centered, and all of a sudden Jesus figuratively takes the lid off the box and you look up and now you see what this is, the nature of the creation. He is going, when he returns, he's interceding and shutting the system down, because again, when the devil doesn't allow the system to function as it's designed, there's no reason to leave it running. Just shut it down, pull the plug on it. It's over. And a lot of these people who are sitting around waiting for a stupid rapture that's not going to happen and are don't understand what it means, a lot of these people are going to faint. They're going to just faint from terror. They're going to want to run and hide. To wrap this up, I want to get one final point in our just theorizing and thinking. One of the things I think these entities would do is say, and this falls in with a lot of the narratives they're giving us about this fake space alien bullshit that they're floating out there. These entities appear and say, well, the reason we're appearing now is because there is a hostile alien force on their way. Because the devil understands that once he intercedes directly in the system, that it's inevitable that God's going to shut the system down. He knows that. But he's out of moves. You know, otherwise, you're just in a stalemate. You know, he could let the system reset, but then he goes back so far in his influence and has to start rebuilding it. And he's just stuck in a loop. There's no point in that. So just go ahead and make that move. These entities would say, there's a hostile alien force coming, and they're coming to destroy the world. And there's an element of truth to that. Because Jesus, when he returns, is going to destroy the world, as you know it. And the people will rally up. How many people are going to buy into that? You know? Of course, it's not going to be space aliens coming to do it. We're wrapping up now. But my current Old Testament reading right now is in the book of Proverbs, and the stress in the beginning of the book of Proverbs, the amount of emphasis that's placed on obtaining wisdom and understanding, this is the reason for it. You've got to understand what's happening in the world around you and what could potentially happen and constantly trying to reason things out. A lot of what we covered today is just personal theories of how I think this could play out. I'm not claiming it's a prophecy. I'm not even claiming to be right. But you look at how things are going and kind of think, how could they possibly play out? I just think it's an interesting thought exercise, if nothing else. If it were to play out like that, a lot of people who are Christian believers, they're going to rally to the side of the devil to fight against the hostile alien force that's coming to destroy our world. If you don't have wisdom and understanding in such a situation, you could find yourself on the wrong side of the line. We got to wrap up on that note. Again, I apologize for going so long today. I hope the discussion was interesting enough that it's worth the extra time. I do appreciate you sticking with me throughout the whole thing. Hope you have a great rest of your week. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.